All right, you guys, welcome back. This is Morgan Zegers. You are watching Freedom Papers. Freedom Papers. We've got Connor Clegg.
Hi, everybody.
And the name of today's paper, Connor, guess.
Brutus Sex.
No, that's the anti-photo. The same subject continued.
Oh, sorry. The same subject continued.
Come on. That was a slam dunk. That was an easy one. You guys, we are doing Federalist Paper 31 today, which is titled The Same Subject Continued by Hamilton as Publius. But the paper that it's the same subject continued on is after Paper 30, titled Concerning the General Power of Taxation. We're talking about taxes again, Connor. If you ask me, this is very much repetitive of the last paper, but we're going to add a little spice.
We're going to add a little
salt
spice.
Bay to the to the episode.
And you were bringing up that he was kind of sassy in this paper, so you have that to look forward to.
Yes, sassy, dismissive, and argumentative.
Huh.
Where the description
sounds like my
words.
Ex-wife.
You were married?
No, I don't know.
Wow, just going over our
heads
today,
all the
jokes.
Charlie did stand up last night, and I'm trying to follow
Charlie
his footsteps.
Did a good job at stand up. Do you want to know? Okay, side note. I was telling Connor, Dave Rubin came for a comedy show last night, and then Blake Masters and him did a Q&A. And Connor, I wanted to tell you this because I'm a dum-dum. I don't know. I've never been to one before. And first of all, Charlie did a great job introducing him. But then Dave Rubin gets on stage and he wanted to poll the audience. And so he said, clap for every descriptive term that you fit in. So I didn't realize that he was calling out all the areas of the political spectrum. Uh-huh. I thought he was just like throwing things out there. And then if you supported it, then you should clap. Uh-huh. And so first he said conservative and everybody was like, woo! The whole crowd goes wild. And then he goes, what about moderates? And people are like, okay.
Yuck.
And I wasn't catching on that he was going like from right to left. Uh-huh. And so classical liberalism in the most generic, basic term, original term is, you know, the principles of the Bill of Rights, the principles of America's founding. And then you have classical liberalism and America's economic independence. These principles are our core principles. So he goes, any conservatives, any moderates? And then he goes, any classical liberals? And I go,
oh my.
And I was the only clapper.
Oh, we and don't like classical liberalism anymore.
Liberalism, neoliberalism, bad. Classical liberalism in its original sense, because my mind was Freedom Papers focused, Connor.
Okay.
I was like, oh. And then everybody looked at me and John went, I was with John Root. He was like, I'm not with this loser. And it was just a very uncomfortable
moment.
What is
John Root? Is he a moderate? Is he?
He's conservative, but basically I had my one lone clap. It was very bad. Very awkward. And no, I'm not a lib, okay? Come on. But that's what he meant. He meant like lib or leftist.
Yeah.
And I clapped for the lib section.
Well, classical liberalism has been corrupted in our day and age as to, it's one of those things that's like, sounds good, doesn't work. Because we don't really live in a society anymore where classical liberalism gives you the room to operate.
It's also just everybody hears liberalism and they go, ugh. And it's like, well, you know, back then when it was just anarchy, tyranny, and oppression, liberalism in the classic sense was, either way, in my head I was like, yeah! Okay.
Anyway.
Back to the point. Where were we? Oh, Federalist we're adding 31. A little spice. We're adding a little spice today because we're reading from Brutus 6, the sixth paper from Brutus, the anti-federalists people. We're reading from the anti-federalists. Connor, first section, I just wanted to read out a little more artful piece by Publius, and then we'll get into the points. Publius starts out the paper, and he says, just kidding, I'm on 30 right now. He said, also, look at this.
This is going really well.
Publius says, in disquisitions of every kind, there are certain primary truths or first principles upon which all subsequent reasonings must depend. And then he goes on and says, of this nature are the maxims of geometry, that the whole is greater than its parts, that things equal to the same are equal to one another, that two straight lines cannot enclose a space, and that all right angles are equal to each other. Of the same nature are these other maxims in ethics and politics, that there cannot be an effect without a cause, that the means ought to be proportioned to the end, that every power ought to be commensurate with its object, that there ought to be no limitation of power destined to effect a purpose which is itself incapable of limitation. But in the sciences of morals and politics, men are found far less tractable. To a certain degree, it is right and useful that this should be the case. Caution and investigation are a necessary armor against error and imposition. But this untractableness may be carried too far and may degenerate into obstinacy, perverseness, or disingenuity.
Being not genuine.
Yeah, that.
Disingenuity.
That. Though it cannot be pretended that the principles of moral and political knowledge have in general the same degree of certainty with those of the mathematics, yet they have much better claims in this respect than to judge from the conduct of men in particular situations, which we should be disposed to allow them. The obscurity is much oftener in the passions and prejudices of the reasoner than in the subject. Men, upon too many occasions, do not give their own understandings fair play, but, yielding to some untoward bias, they entangle themselves in words and confound themselves in subtleties. I would say it's quite cool because I was trying to understand what the heck he was saying, and I looked it up, and he was talking about how there's absolute hard truths that you can see in mathematics, and then there's hard truths in the work of politics and man, but then there's this other space where you have morals and people and politics and all of these things kind of combine, and how do you come up with what is right and true?
Yeah. Can I say something on this?
Yeah. Okay. Go at it.
So a couple things. First of all, he's talking about objective truth and reality, which was a commonplace understanding back in those days. And we don't really have that anymore. And then he this line, the obscurity is much oftener in the passions and prejudices of the reasoner, et cetera, et cetera. Men upon too many occasions do not give their own understandings fair play, but yielding to some untoward bias, they entangle themselves in words and confound themselves in subtleties. Before we started filming this, I was watching footage of Charlie tabling at Berkeley, talking to some of the leftists over there. And he was getting into it with this kid, I don't want to assume it's gender, about whether or not men could get pregnant. And they went back and forth for about 45 seconds on, well, men cannot get pregnant. But then the kid would go, well, males can get pregnant. And then Charlie said, well, men, and he's like, no, you're missing the point. Men are a social, and the kid was just fumbling over himself. And I was like, he is entangling himself in words and confounding himself in subtleties, right? And it just goes to show the danger that's posed by rejecting absolute truth and rejecting things that are, you know, just factual. Like I can tell you that gravity exists, right? Because I take this book and I know if I throw it, it's going to fall to the ground. Sorry.
Connor.
Sorry, excuse me.
Such violence.
I'm not normally one to disrespect a book like that, but it felt proper. I wasn't going to throw Hamilton.
I know. I was like, wait, was that the Bible? Okay.
Or Madison. Is this Hamilton or Madison? This is Madison, isn't it?
This is Madison.
Anyway, Jim. I wasn't going to throw Jim. He would be easy to throw. He was our smallest president. Anyway, yeah, we are so far removed from this moment of moral and objective and absolute truth right now to where our political debates couldn't play out the way that these did back in the days of the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, because he's starting from a reasonable point that I think we can all agree on, but now we can't even define what a woman is, right?
Yeah, no, so. I'm glad you made that connection too, because that's why I wanted to read it out loud, because back then they were like, all right, so there's objective truth, basic facts, and then once we get into more of like how to solve problems, what's the best way to go about it, that's where we can disagree and we're going to have to find out what the correct course of action is. And it made me think of like, wow, it's almost like the left attacks the objective truth and creates false truths that we should be understanding and accepting so that they can dominate a political conversation that they wouldn't have a nuanced win with if we had that actual conversation.
And we've talked about this before offline, and then we've ended up talking about this a lot on Freedom Papers, and everyone is asking, why, Connor and Morgan, why do you always talk about the trans issue on Freedom Papers? What does that have to do with anything? Well, it has to do with this exactly, right? Because you're precisely correct in saying that the left is waging a war on objective, absolute truth. And the trans issue is just such a perfect perfect encapsulation of that war, that's why it's worth fighting. That's why it's worth fighting back against. Because if we let them get away with saying that a man can get pregnant and that a woman can inseminate another woman through male means, right? Whatever the hell they're trying to push on us these days, that men can have periods, whatever. If we let them get away with that, then they've effectively won the war and conquered the idea of objective truth.
Yeah.
In which case, that's crossing the Rubicon. That's Napoleon going into Waterloo. It's like it's the end of everything, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, that first example where he brings in geometry, he was also just, he meant math, science, these basic things in society.
Right.
And then the laws of politics, it's like with the left where they try to not only change science, but they're also trying to distort the laws of economics, which you can't change. Mm-hmm. That's just how the, when you do something in an economy, certain things will happen. And the left thinks that they can go around those things. So the law of nature and nature's God and the law of economics, and then getting into the morality of it, they're trying to win that by distorting the first two. It reminded me when you went to college, I think it was my freshman year. Maybe that was when I first learned. I remember first being taught, they told me that gender was now different than sex. And I remember for the longest time, sex just was like, you know, the uncomfortable word in school. And so people would use gender. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Where it was kind of like, oh, like the PC version is to say gender in school instead of saying sex because it was kind of like the silly one.
Yeah.
And now they're like, oh, no, those are completely different things. And they have created a difference between gender and sex and gender identity and sex, all
out
these different
nowhere.
Things. And I remember now specifically being taught it and being like, well, that's not what I thought we had learned this whole time. And in my head, I had to relearn it. Oh my gosh. Thinking back to that, I was indoctrinated.
Well,
I was
indoctrinated. That's how they do it. They take over the institutions, and then the institutions, which you're supposed to have trust in and confidence and faith, then betray you in the name of social justice and wokeness. Right?
Yeah. And before we get back to the paper, it reminded me too of like, I think we were the last generation to be taught a lot of this stuff in the right way. And then we were re-educated. I was re-educated on this stuff, told that gender is different than sex, a whole lesson on it multiple times over in that classroom. After learning it, but now think of the young people who are going to forever be taught the separates, you know?
Well,
that really concerns
here's
me.
Here's the cool thing is I'm what, I think 2 years older than you. I graduated college in 2018. When did you graduate?
Yeah.
You graduated in 2018? Okay. You graduated in 3 years, right?
Yeah. So I guess you're 1 year.
So I'm 1 year older.
I graduated high school 2015.
I graduated in 14. So I'm 1 year older than Morgan. I was never taught that, right? So that's how delicate this line is here, right? It's a year's worth of difference.
Wow.
And it corresponds with the, you know, electoral mood and the political mood of the nation. And there's no coincidence that, you know, in 2014, when I graduated and went into college, 15, 16, 17, 16, I would have been taking like my basic science classes that I have to get to graduate.
Yeah.
Trump gets elected, right? Mm. So when you get to college, Trump's probably already elected. Now they're like, oh crap, we have to like start, you know, actually pushing our stuff.
No,
so,
they burned the flag on campus when
he was
elected.
Oh, yeah.
I was not there, thank goodness.
Anyway, that's how delicate it is, though.
So let's get back to it. So Connor and I, before we were filming, were talking about how, in general, I like this paper because sometimes the papers can just be very difficult to understand in the sense of, like, what's the main lesson? He's making a bunch of different points. There's fancy sentences, but what's the point? Here in this paper, you guys, if you haven't read it yet, he just lists out the three main points that he's trying to make in one paragraph, another, and then another, and then he kind of finishes it off. So it's only like a three and a half page paper in this little book that we have. So I wanted to kind of look at those. But first, we want to start with anti-federalists, what the anti-federalists were saying.
Yeah.
Because you guys, in paper 30, it was the same topic. And so we talked about why Hamilton thinks it's important for the federal government to be able to directly tax the citizens instead of having the states tax the people. And then when the federal government needed money, whether we got invaded and we need to start an army or whatever it may be, then the federal government would ask each state to hand over a lump sum of money. That is not going to work for many reasons. We've discussed that. I won't hammer it home again for you guys. But this is more about why the government should be able to directly tax the people.
Right.
Three reasons. That being said, the anti-federalists, you guys, were worried for two things. First of all, they thought that giving the federal government the authority to tax the people directly instead of the states, because this was supposed to be a republic where the states had most power and then we had a strong central government that brought all the states together in a way, they were worried about giving this direct taxation power to the federal government because it could lead to tyranny. And in the last paper, remember we discussed that tyranny could potentially come, oppression could potentially come from overtaxation.
Yeah.
That's what the anti-federalists were saying. So they were worried about this, but they were also worried that the states would become at the mercy, quote, at the mercy of the federal legislature, because they would be able to hand over and control the funds and what the states could and couldn't do. So there's an interesting thing. We have this other book, if anybody wants to buy it. It's called Reflection and Choice, The Federalists, the Anti-Federalists, and the Debate That Defined America, edited by Gary Gregg and Aaron Coleman.
It's a beautiful
so
book.
This has all the Federalist Papers, Connor, uh-huh. and the Anti-Federalist Papers, wow. and an evaluation of them.
Yeah.
So for Federalist 30 and 31, this book says that we should be reading this from Brutus 6. It says, the people would find no respite from the tax man, according to the Anti-Federalists. As Brutus 6 chillingly prophesied, quote, this power, exercised without limitation, will introduce itself into every corner of the city and country. It will wait upon the ladies at their toilet and will not leave them in any of their domestic concerns. It will accompany them to the ball, the play, and the assembly. It will go with them when they visit and will, on all occasions, sit beside them on their carriages, nor will it desert them even at church. It will enter the house of every gentleman, watch over his cellar, wait upon his cook in the kitchen, follow the servants into the parlor, preside over the table, and note down all he eats or drinks. It will attend him to his bedchamber and watch him while he sleeps. This is how I feel. I'm like, yeah. It will take cognizance of the professional man in his office or his study. It will watch the merchant in the counting house or in his store. It will follow the mechanic to his shop and in his work, and will haunt him in his family and his bed. It will be a constant companion of the industrious farmer in all his labor. It will be with him in the house and in the field, observe the toil of his hands and the sweat of his brow. It will penetrate into the most obscure cottage, and finally, it will light upon the head of every person in the United States. To all these different classes of people, and in all these circumstances in which it will attend them, the language in which it will address them will be give, give, in capitals. I am ready to riot. I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to torch the nearest Wendy's. Connor, I'm going to riot. I'm going to burn down the nearest Wendy's, loot the nearest Target. What else do they do? Steal sneakers from the nearest Nike store, all in the name of social justice for Morgan Zegers and her wallet. Okay, I'm done.
I have no response.
Was that not inspiring or what?
No, that was beautiful. I'm ready to run through a brick wall. In fact, I just broke the desk. Dang it.
That was so beautiful.
No, it was. It was a really, really beautiful, impassioned defense. But it's also like...
I'm all sweaty now.
Okay.
I'm all hot and bothered.
No, yeah. Look, taxes suck. But like I said in the last one, if you were listening or watching, it's the price that we pay to live in a civilized society.
I thought you were going to be like, if you're listening, Morgan.
Well, no, it's the price that we pay to live in a civilized society, a society where we don't go and burn down Wendy's and loot Nike stores and murder cops, right?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, Morgan, but that's...
That's not the appropriate way to handle political...
It's not the appropriate way to handle political...
Political problems is what I meant to say. Sorry, I've done a lot of news hits today and my brain is fried. I'll be honest.
Me too. Anyway, no, look, I get it. I get where he's coming from. But at the end of the day, Hamilton kind of piece by piece just absolutely refutes that. And like you said, he is kind of sassy. And you're the one who kind of goes through and reads the passages here. So I don't want to step on your toes, right?
Go ahead.
But he says, the moment we launch into conjectures about the usurper, now we've got the case of the Morgans.
It
is tough. The moment we launch into conjectures about the usurpations of the federal government, we get into an unfathomable abyss, and we know not on which side to turn to extricate ourselves from the perplexities into which it has so been rashly adventured, these conjectures, right? Mm-hmm. So he's like, we don't know whether to vomit out our bullshit or vomit out our baloney or to send it out the back end, right? I'm trying to censor myself here, but that's what he's saying.
Like,
we don't know which side to turn to extricate ourselves from this stuff, because it could just as easily, he's saying, come out of your butthole as it comes out of your mouth, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
But to a point, he's kind of right. It's the same way that the left today uses this really impassioned language, like, oh, you're going to kill your grandmother, or, you won't have a place to live in 5 years if we don't do something about climate change, you know?
Yeah.
It's the same kind of impassioned
language.
They're
going to follow your ladies into the toilet.
That fires people up. Exactly. And now we've got trans people following people into the toilet, right? So we try to use the same impassioned language, and people are like, oh, you're a fear monger, but they do the exact same thing. And I totally get it. Taxes suck. But at the end of the day, Hamilton's making a much more reasonable argument here. As difficult as that is for me to say as a conservative and as a right winger, I guess, who doesn't want the government to usurp on my paycheck, that's the reality of the situation. We have to live in a civilized society. We are not Somalia. And we have a beautiful country that's worth preserving and protecting. And to that end, it's a privilege to live here. And if you're born here, you have to pay into that privilege. Connor. Call me Bernie Sanders. I don't know.
Okay, AOC. Get out of my Freedom Paper set before I throw this at you.
I'm sorry.
We're throwing multiple things here today.
Now, taxes should be lower.
I am going to riot just because I'm mad at Connor. I'm just kidding. I actually agree.
Anyway.
I hate having to say this. I agree with Hamilton in the sense that we do need to allow the federal government to tax the people. It makes sense. We'll get into his reasonings. I will say I have... Connor, a slight request. If I could go back.
Yeah,
you know those memes about going back and like the girls want to meet their grandma? They're your granddaughter. Then the men are like, go. I don't know. They like go and change history with information. I would do that, by the way. But I would go back and politely suggest, do you think it would be possible? Because I get where you're coming from. I agree. I'm not saying I disagree. Mm-hmm. Would it be possible to put some language or some sort of limitation? I can't think of it. I'm not asking you to like actually come up with the language right now, but like what if there was a way to have come up with some better restriction? And here's the thing is at the time they weren't saying we're going to now make an income tax where
exactly.
They didn't establish the income tax the way we have it now. That was that came in like after Civil War and then it disappeared and then it came back in the early 1900s. But it's like perhaps we're just missing some language that could have prevented us from having the current tax situation where people are taxed at a very high rate, if you ask me, and then our tax dollars are mostly wasted. It's like, was there a little bit of a fix that could have been? Do you think there could have been something added to the documents that protected our rights if there was going to be government taxation at a federal level of the people? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so Hamilton goes on to talk about, I'm going to have to find it in here, but the gist of it is that, and this is kind of where I will tend to agree with the anti-federalists. I think this is where you're coming from. Hamilton goes on to say that the power of the federal government to enact laws and to operate in whatever manner is necessary and proper shouldn't be restricted. Do you remember that one paper that we read? I think it was like 27 or 26. It was a few papers ago.
And it was concerning.
Where he was like, we should have carte blanche authority to just do whatever the hell we want, right? And we were like, whoa, time out.
Yeah.
So I think that was his mindset here. But that was in regards to military force and the exhortation thereof, right? This is in regards to taxation. And I think that he was well-intentioned in saying that it's just a common logical precept that we have to be able to raise revenue, right? Because they weren't even talking about the manner in which they would raise revenue right now. Mm-hmm. The anti-federalists were simply trying to deny the federal government the ability
to do so. Mm-hmm.
To raise revenue in the first place, right? So whenever we got into the Bill of Rights, I think that there should have been something added in that case, right? Where it was like, all right, now taxes are going to be levied in this specific manner and they are not to be levied in this specific manner, right? That would make sense to me.
But they almost actually, Connor, they kind of like, they already put those protections in and then it was our politicians that abandoned that.
They perverted them, right?
Yeah. And so like, it all goes back. I know we bring this up all the time, but exactly what Paul Gosar said, who's in Congress, mm-hmm. that we used to have limited spending. We used to have accountability for how funds were spent. And then the legislature now hands that power over to the government in the executive branch. And then they just go and spend tax dollars like crazy.
Yeah.
So we had a system where this kind of accountability could have continued to exist
and
almost.
There's something that people push a lot in the grassroots. It's like, I can't remember what number, but they call it a balanced budget amendment, right? Where you just add an amendment to the Bill of Rights that basically say the people demand and they have the ability to hold the government accountable to this notion that you have to balance your budget.
Huh.
Like it's our money and we're not going to allow you to run a shoddy house when it comes to financials.
Seems kind of basic.
So that seems really basic, but that would limit the ability of these of the executive branch in a lot of ways. And the legislative branch, when they get too feisty, to actually enact the kind of radical things that they want to do, or conversely, on the right at least, go to war or something, right? Send $40 billion to Ukraine. So they don't want to have that boot of financial responsibility on their necks. So instead, they're going to put the boot of financial irresponsibility and recklessness on the necks of the taxpayer. And that's where I'm going to get radical and go burn down the Wendy's, right? So, I hate paying taxes, but I recognize the virtue of it. But also, whenever they're doing stupid stuff like sending $40 billion to Ukraine, despite the fact that America is in a terrible position right now, that makes me really pissed off.
They're following us to the toilet.
Yeah. And so like there's things that you could put into place here, but we all know that the founders made it intentionally difficult to actually like amend the Constitution and to change the Constitution because they were relying on the better angels of our, elected officials' natures.
Yeah.
But we can't really rely on those anymore, can we?
No, well, actually, the killer sentence in this, I would say, are the last two sentences. But before we get to the end, wrap-up paper, I'm glad you noticed those too. Let's just go through these 3 points. Connor, first, and again, you guys, we've heard them in the last paper. He's kind of repeating. But he basically just lists out, boom, 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 these are why we need them, and then he ends the paper. So he says...
I just want to make for a note, in case anyone can't see, Morgan's not reading from her book right now. She's reading from a solitary page that was ripped out of the book. Okay, thank you. Just carry on.
Okay, my papers fall apart. They are freedom papers. They are free.
Well loved.
They are Paul Revere's. Where am I coming up with these random names? John Hancock?
John Adams. John Hancock. John Quincy Adams.
What's wrong with me?
John Marshall.
I struggle city for Morgan, okay? Yes, I'm reading from a paper. Number one. This is such a serious topic, and I'm not being serious. My brain is fried, you guys. There's all this stuff going on with the Buffalo shooting, and then they're accusing us of the replacement theory, and so I've been focused on that this whole time, and then I had to be reminded, oh, you have to film Freedom Papers on taxation today. Try not to get too pissy. Too late. I already said I'm going to burn down a Wendy's. I'm highly concerned with myself. I got so passionate over one little paragraph. I am weak.
It happens.
What happened? Where's my backbone?
I don't know, Morgan.
I know. It's like, send her to the gulag. Okay. Number one. So he says they are in substance as follows. Here are his things. Number one, a government ought to contain in itself every power requisite to the full accomplishment of the objects committed to its care and to the complete execution of the trusts for which it is responsible, free from every other control but a regard to the public good and to the sense of the people. So, if you're going to give the federal government responsibilities, it's got to be able to carry out those responsibilities, and it needs money to do so. Right, Connor?
Correct.
Any comments?
Go ahead.
Bada bing, bada boom. Number two, as the duties of superintending the national defense and of securing the public peace against foreign or domestic violence involve a provision for casualties and dangers to which no possible limits can be assigned, the power of making that provision ought to know no other bounds than the exigencies of the nation and the resources of the community. So you can't really limit their powers. I guess that kind of answers my question.
Right.
Earlier, you can't limit their powers because you don't know what kind of problem is going to be coming up. Is there going to be a Hitler in Nazi Germany rising up that we need to participate in a world war and fight and do all that stuff? Or are we going to be peaceful for 500 years and never have an invasion? You just never really know.
You never know.
So you can't put too much of a limit. That being said, maybe I wish that there was some sort of language about you have to have the balanced budget. You can't spend money that you don't have. Like, we don't have the $40 billion for Ukraine. That would have been maybe nice. And then number three, to wrap it up. Three, as revenue is the essential engine by which the means of answering the national exigencies must be procured, the power of procuring that article in its full extent must necessarily be comprehended in that of providing for those exigencies. As theory and practice conspire to prove that the power of procuring revenue is unavailing when exercised over the states in their collective capacities, the federal government must of necessity be invested with an unqualified power of taxation in the ordinary modes. So, if you need money to do the duties that are your responsibility, aka the federal government's responsibility, then you got to be able to actually bring the money in. You got to be able to bring in revenue, and the power of taxation is what they're talking about. So, I mean, that's kind of like bang, bang, bang. I agree with those, Connor. That being said, I think since this point, moving up to 2022, where we're paying tens of thousands of dollars to the government, we're in how much debt per taxpayer? $200,000?
I looked it up last time, but it's a lot. I think it's like $91,000.
Oh. 91,000. I thought that was per taxpayer.
It might be.
Per taxpayer or per citizen. I can't remember what it is, but it's almost $100,000 that is in debt. Connor's looking now.
We are, oh God, this is so many numbers. Debt per citizen, $91,473. Debt per taxpayer, $242,985.
Yeah. So if you're a taxpayer, like if you want to help get the government out of debt, just pay up $250,000 to the federal government.
Yeah,
I'm sure they'll spend it really. I'm sure they'll put it away and really help to pay off the debt, Connor. They won't give it to Ukraine. It's fine.
Right.
So those are the points. Another thing, let me think, Connor.
Can I say one thing real quick?
Yeah. Go for it.
And you're right that he's making points here, but he's actually doing something that's a little bit intricate there, and he's making what's called a logical syllogism. The best example of this, you've heard it probably in your philosophy 101 classes. So this is an example of what a syllogism is, right? All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. He's the one who came up with this idea of logic and philosophy and things like this, right? So Hamilton is making a proposition here that if government is going to contain every power requisite to operate, basically, that is true. So if that is true, and this is true, and this is true, then it ought to be true as well that we should have the power to tax. He's making an ironclad argument that it is an accepted objective truth in the same vein that he was talking about in the first paragraph, right? Mm. He's saying you can't wiggle your way out of this because we all agree on this one thing. And if we all agree on this one thing, then it must be true. It must logically follow that we ought to have the power to tax. So he's saying it's actually really a beautiful paper. If you read into it like this, he's saying objective truth exists. Now, sometimes it might not be possible for moral and political, realities to be viewed as objective truths. But let me prove to you that objective truth in this instance, when it comes to moral and political power, does exist. And here's how. And he does it really convincingly, frankly, in my opinion.
So no, I mean, that went right over my little country bumpkin.
No, it's not about country bumpkin. You know, look, I'm very country myself, right? In my backwards hat and Tommy Bahama shirt, but it's a little bit complex, right? But I majored in philosophy in college. Did you know that? For about 2 years, and then we got to the point where there were a bunch of barefoot hippies running around. I was like, I'm not doing this crap
anymore.
Well,
look at you using your philosophy degree.
But that's just a little nugget for you. Enjoy.
Thank you for adding that nugget. Yeah, I didn't catch that at all, you guys. I'm so sorry to disappoint.
No.
Connor, fantastic point. Do you want to read the last sentence?
Okay.
The last two sentences. Start with everything.
I don't know if I know how to read.
Everything beyond this must be left.
Publius said, everything beyond this must be left to the prudence and firmness of the people, who, as they will hold the scales in their own hands, it is to be hoped, will always take care to preserve the constitutional equilibrium between the general and state governments. Upon this ground, which is evidently the true one, it will not be difficult to obviate the objections which have been made to an indefinite power of taxation in the United States.
Beautiful.
Thank
Isn't
you.
That nice?
No, it's really nice. And it goes to what we were saying earlier, is that we're creating a system here that gives the power to the people. And if we can present to them that it is objectively true and necessary to have the power to tax, then they are going to make the right decision. And
beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Beautiful. Simple paper, you guys. No, we're good.
Okay.
Simple paper, you guys. Thank you for listening or watching. We appreciate it. Thanks for joining Connor and I. That was Federalist Paper 31 with Brutus 6 from the Anti-Federalists. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.